This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 1st of September 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of September. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: On Your Bike, Big Boost for Cycling. Developers Told to Finish House Scheme. And Oil Drilling Fight Heats Up. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was On Your Bike, Big Boost for Cycling. New cycle rights for pedestrianised street. Cycling in Winchester will be boosted by new measures being introduced. Hampshire County Council is launching improved cycle routes by removing existing travel constraints. It will mean cyclists will be allowed in previously pedestrianised streets. The Active Travel Fund schemes, which are part of the Winchester Movement Strategy, WMS, include allowing bikes in the pedestrianised stretch of Middlebrook Street between Silver Hill and Friars Gate, and closing a side street to traffic. The WMS was adopted by Hampshire and Winchester councils in spring 2019, following public consultation in 2018. It aims to promote a reduction in traffic and a healthier lifestyle choice. In Middlebrook Street, the existing cycle route south into the retail core of the city will be extended, enabling north to south cross-city cycling. The County Council also proposes contraflow cycling in Parchment Street between North Walls and St George's Street. There will also be a prohibition of driving traffic order in the narrow Hyde Church Lane between Hyde Street and Worthy Lane. Lastly, it wants to change the junction at Jewry Street, Hyde Street, North Walls to improve safety for cyclists negotiating the junction with the installation of the Advanced Stop Lines, ACL, and improve traffic signals. Detectors would allow earlier release at the traffic lights to enable cyclists to have a head start. A County Council spokesman said, "The proposal in Middlebrook Street is one of a number of schemes to remove existing constraints to travel and transport around Winchester to enable growth and make the city a healthier and more accessible place to live, work and visit. This proposal will allow cyclists to legitimately use the area between Silver Hill and Friars Gate, which is currently pedestrianised. This would extend the existing cycle route south into the retail heart of the city and deliver one of the top priority improvements requested by local cycle groups."
Developer Told to Finish House Scheme. Winchester City Council is calling for a developer to resume work on the 9 houses in Stanmore. The development, on a narrow lane off Stanmore Lane, is almost finished, but work has stalled since last October. The houses next to Stanmore Primary School had been vandalised with windows smashed. It's unclear why the development has not been finished, but last October, Prem Kinder of Extreme Construction said there'd been an issue with the supply of electricity which had caused the delay. Mr. Kinder previously told the Chronicle, "We have been waiting for the electrical connection and it has taken a long time to get it done. The site will be up and running from next week and it's all under control." He also said the development was due to be completed by the start of 2023, which hasn't happened. Councillor Chris Westwood, City Council Cabinet Member for the Housing, has called for the developer to finish the work. Councillor Westwood said, "This is a privately owned site and planning permission was granted to the developer in March 2019. We would like to see the developer complete the building in line with the approved planning application. The site is not advertised for sale and Winchester City Council currently has no plans to purchase the partially completed development. The redevelopment next to the upgraded electricity substation and the railway line will see 5 detached houses including 1 4-bedroomed, 2 3-beds and 2 2-beds and 4 2-bedroom flats. The access from Stanmore Lane will be resurfaced with a passing bay. Mr. Kimber was approached for comment, and there is a picture of Councillor Chris Westwood and the houses off Stanmore Lane, some with their windows boarded up.
Oil drilling fight heats up. A petition has been launched opposing plans to investigate oil and gas at Avington. As reported in the Chronicle last month, the proposal from iGas Energy Limited is for the retention of well site and existing surface and subsurface infrastructure for a further period of 5 years in order to allow for further appraisal of oil and gas. The scheme has been controversial, with opposition from local climate groups, WIN ACC and Extinction Rebellion. A petition has now been launched by the local Liberal Democrats. Danny Chambers, Winchester Lib Dem election candidate, said, "This Conservative government has disgracefully railroaded through this new oil drilling site despite local opposition. It is horrifying to think our national park is set to become an oil field again. People in Winchester have been ignored and taken for granted by Conservative ministers. Whether it's allowing raw sewage dumping in our rivers or allowing oil drilling in our national park, the Conservatives have stopped even pretending to care about our local environment. We need to put an end to this oil field. An online petition has been started, and local groups are already rallying to force a government U-turn." Winchester MP Steve Bryan told The Guardian on Thursday that he was concerned at the idea of drilling taking place amid local opposition. Mr. Bryan said, "Given it's, rightly, rather hard to do anything in a national park, including scale up an already well-run summer festival, it doesn't sit well you can secure permission to drill for oil. If there's a wish from landowner or applicant to do this, given the sensitivities, it should only be possible with some form of local consent. And right now, I don't see that." A spokesman for iGas Energy Limited, the owner Star Energy Group PLC, previously said, "There is no question the UK will continue to need oil. We are not currently in a position to rely solely on renewable energy sources. The Avington site is an existing site that already contains all the infrastructure required for the proposed oil exploration. It is not our intention to detract from the experiential qualities of the national park. Indeed, at appeal, the planning inspector commented on the plans for the site, and I quote, 'I find that the proposed development would conserve and enhance the landscape and scenic beauty of the national park.'" And this is accompanied by a photograph of some of the protesters at Avington with their signs outside a metal railing protesting at the oil and gas drilling.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Alexander, Evelyn Rose Alexander, formerly White, née Hibbard, who died peacefully at Brackenlea Care Home at Shawford, aged 91. Fox, Derek Malcolm Fox, who was the founder of Fox Garden Machinery at Burlesdon and subsequently Bishop's Waltham, who died peacefully at home on the 12th of August, aged 89. Fremantle, Janet Fremantle, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a short illness, aged 86. And Schottlander, Anne Patricia Christine Schottlander, née Spicer, died peacefully on the 27th of August, aged 84. Andrew, I think we now have Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment is written by Moira Redmond, and it's entitled, "Try Giving Prayer a Go." I had two big worries last week, ridiculously different from each other, and neither earth-shatteringly important except to me. They both came good, as it happened, while I had devoted, slightly reluctantly, a couple of hours to trying to help someone. I had put my phone away, and when I picked it up again, I was delighted to see two pieces of good news. This made me think. I had prayed about both these items, and after my first incredulous response to the two emails, I was so full of emotion that I prayed again in thanks for the blessings. And I thought, how do people manage if they don't pray? What do they do when things go wrong? And how do they give thanks when they go right? I hope that doesn't sound patronizing. It was a genuine thought. And I had been so grateful and glad that there was something I could do while I was waiting to hear, and something I could do after I received my good news. It's only in recent years that I have been open to talking about this. I would have been concerned in the past that I might embarrass people, that they didn't want to hear about it. I was very nervous about offering prayers for non-churchgoers. But a while back, I decided that it was something I needed to do. I needed to be brave. And the results surprised me. Of course, I would never force something on someone who was very anti-prayer. And I hope I am always sensitive, ready to drop the conversation if necessary. But in fact, people are always polite and often grateful. When little things go wrong, there is so little anyone can do, or offer, or receive, that to have prayers to give is something so positive that it is usually very welcome. In the Catholic Church, we also can light candles to represent the prayers we are offering. And again, people are usually very happy if I say that I will do that for them. So much so that a wide range of people now often ask me, please, will you light one of your candles for me? I'm also part of a church group that, among other things, asks each other for prayers for ourselves, for our loved ones, for anyone who needs them. We all feel we get a strength from this, and we get results. We find it important to remember that prayers are always answered. It is just that sometimes the answer isn't the one you wanted to hear. We have described ourselves as a ring of prayer, with strength and power in our circle. Perhaps you will argue that it's just a coincidence when good things follow on from prayers. Maybe it is. But a former Archbishop of Canterbury, William Temple, used to say, when I pray, coincidences happen. And when I don't, they don't. And I think nearly everyone who prays would agree with him. If you want some coincidence in your life, I can highly recommend that you try praying or give praying a go. Or ask someone else to pray for you. And that was written by Moira Redmond.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. So, Nikki, please, you have the first.
And this one from Graham Ryder, headed Penalised. A warning to anyone parking at Alsford Station car park. Only visitors to the Watercress line are able to park for over 3 hours, and only then if they have a valid voucher, which is only obtainable from the railway booking office. The voucher is only available if the railway is operating that day. Indeed, with that voucher, you may park there for up to 24 hours. The car park is branded as short stay, under 3 hours, for everyone except Watercress line users. Indeed, from August to January, inclusive the line is only open 50% of the time, yet local people cannot take advantage of the vacant spaces. As a local person visiting the area to explore the countryside, I now have to ensure that my activity, including coffee and cake in an Alsford cafe, is all completed in under 3 hours. This is often unachievable, as making a circular walk to explore the area is often not possible in under 3 hours. Result, go somewhere else. Any activities in Alsford are now limited to 3 hours or get a fine, and the meter attendants are very hot on this, don't be mistaken. I cannot see why local people and visitors to the town who are not using the Watercress line are being penalised. Indeed, from visiting the car park, it is common to see cars with a car park ticket for over 3 hours, sadly without a voucher, but with a penalty notice attached to their screens, even though they may have been parked seemingly legally for under 4 hours and potentially up to 24 hours. This does not make sense. It is not simple to follow. It is designed to penalise drivers and land them with a minimum £25 and potentially £50 fine when they felt they were doing everything correctly. This system must be changed, and it has brought the local authority into disrepute, and at the very least the parking meters must be reprogrammed to clearly display to drivers what the situation is. A sign next to the meter is not enough to warn drivers of the pit of anguish they are knowingly about to fall into. And that from Graham Ryder, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Fracking. Reference, frack or not to frack. Kate McIntosh failed to tell us where these wind turbines and solar panels are produced. Not in this country. China? Chronicle Letters, August 24th. How much pollution is produced in the production and transportation at great expense across the seas and airways that we pay for on enlarged energy bills? Fracking is on our doorstep, like growing your own veg at home. Much cleaner and cheaper. And that was Mr. Peter J. King of Longfield Road, Winnall, Winchester.
And this letter is from Mr. Alan, Alan Zanetti, and it's entitled Anti-Car Council. Again, the City Council's solution, if they are short of money, is to increase prices for everything. Many people will think twice about coming to Winchester in the evenings. It seems to me that Councillor Learney's wish is to rid Winchester totally of cars. All she seems to be interested in is cyclists, who basically are the bane of our lives. Nearly every one of them seems to ignore traffic lights, and I saw one of them cycling down the high street, causing chaos to everyone. As for our 20-year strategic plan that has been delayed again, probably they need to waste more money on consultant fees. As your previous reader said, why don't they consult the people that really know what they're doing? Winchester is a beautiful place. Please do not let it go to wreck and ruin. Everything that is done in Winchester seems to take about 10 times as long as elsewhere. How about catering for the locals rather than the tourists? And that's from Alan Zanetti, Woodman Close, Sparshalt.
And it's from Simon Lever, headed Swimming Costs. While acknowledging costs have risen, adults swim for enjoyment and fitness and naturally have to pay. However, parents should not be charged for very young children, as it is essential they be taught to swim before such activity helps develop alternative skills and enhance muscle development. Parents with a number of children will also be burdened with extra costs. Young children are a priority, and the earlier they learn to swim, the better. And that from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Defend staff. The industry partnership of all UK railway companies, the Rail Delivery Group, is proposing to close most railway station ticket offices. Staff will move to somewhere else on the station, where it is suggested that they will perform sales, advice, information and assistance. South Western Railway have stated that they will provide the same level of access with the proposed new arrangements as they do currently. They do not say how, especially providing accessibility assistance, other than they will meet their statutory responsibilities. There is a consultation process for anyone to voice their opinion and hopefully opposition to this wholesale UK change. Winchester Labour Party are among a large number of organisations, trade unions, senior citizens, disability rights groups and transport groups opposing these proposals because they do not meet the essential needs of the railway travelling public. Apart from contacting your MP Steve Brine to register concerns, there are at least 4 other options to express concerns, including emailing ticket office swr@transportfocus.org.uk and giving feedback on the SWR website, Professional staff at railway ticket offices provide a high-quality, knowledgeable and essential public-facing service. This proposal could not only reduce the quality and value of such help, it is intended to substantially reduce the numbers of such specifically trained staff. It is alleged that the plans will meet modern consumer expectations as part of the greater plan to modernise UK railways. We believe it is a highly detrimental and retrograde proposal. Have your say. Register your opinion and defend indispensable railway ticket office staff. The deadline for comments is Friday, September the 1st. So you better really hurry up. That's from Peter Rees, Treasurer of the Winchester Labour Party.
And this is a letter entitled Mosque Support, and is from Chris Pines. Members of the Winchester Muslim Cultural Association, the WMCA, are all local people who have lived in the Winchester district for one, two, or three generations. Although a relatively small group of people, they include doctors at RHCH, solicitors, lawyers, police, army personnel, teachers, restaurateurs, taxi drivers, shop and office workers, district and county council officers. In other words, local people educated in local schools who pay their national and local taxes like the rest of us. Their charity, WMCA, registered with the Charity Commission, number 1085124, has been running for about 20 years and is their chief vehicle for raising community funds and organizing their charitable aims. Their formal organization is maintained by triannual elections, which, as independent commissioner, I oversee to ensure fairness and transparency. They seek a permanent venue for weekly prayers for the last 20 years, and they have hired different buildings across the city, which they find unsatisfactory, unlike many other locally represented faith groups, which maintain permanent premises such as chapels and churches. Additionally, WMCA members wish to further their charitable aims: education, outreach, interfaith work, fair representation, equality, arts development, and permanent spaces are essential to achieve these aims and activities. Lastly, the actual building in Hyde Street is in desperate need of TLC, which the WMCA intends to offer it, allowing all of the residents of Hyde to benefit. And that's from Chris Pines, Lower Stanmore Lane, Winchester.
Thank you. Now that concludes the letters. We move on to the editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed "A Small Step in the Right Direction." The Chinese say a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Efforts to promote cycling and walking in Winchester need the same level of stoic self-belief. Progress has been agonisingly slow. The pro-cycling lobby has been battling for improvements for decades, but have not got very far. Phil Gagg of Winchester Action on Climate Crisis says the County Council measures that we report today are a small step in the right direction. WINAC is pressing for a more radical programme aimed at reducing car use in Winchester city centre. But there are huge obstacles in the way that will always be there, namely Winchester's hilly terrain and narrow streets. Looking at the Netherlands, they have advantages with both, a large, flat country with many modern, wide streets. Many car drivers will say that Winchester is already too stacked against the motorist. This is untrue, something highlighted by the cross-party support for pro-cycling measures. The County Council is Conservative-controlled, the City Council Liberal Democrat. WINAC is right that a big boost to buses is needed, if people are to be persuaded out of their cars.
Thank you. Now we have first person, please, Norma.
And this is entitled "Skyrocketing Cost of Parking," and it's by Kimberly Barber. How much is too much to park your car? It's a question that has been bothering me. In Canterbury, where my mum lives, two of the city centre car parks charge £3.50 an hour. An average trip to the city for a few hours now costs more than £10 in parking charges. If that's too steep, you can park in one of the council-run car parks a bit further out and walk for £2.50 per hour. To add insult to injury, the council shut the park and ride on our side of the city at the same time as hiking parking charges. They say that the increased charges are helping to plug the £5 million deficit. The issue has been extensively reported by the Kent Gazette and is much the same answers we hear from Winchester City Council and its recent need to increase the parking charges. There's not enough cash. The council needs to make it from somewhere, and so on. It's easy to hide behind a veil of green and say that it's been done to stop nasty fumes, when truth be told, it's all about cold, hard cash. As someone who has often needed to be at various places across Winchester, I fork out about £17 top whack parking charges numerous times each month. It makes me wince every time I put my card in. This sudden need to impose extra parking charges does not stop there. Pull up in Wickham in Square to pop into the butcher's or hair saloon, even to support the two charity shops, and you'll have some annoyingly fish about for 80p. It's not a lot in the grand scheme of things. There are not so many things that you can buy are cheaper than £1.50 we charge for the Hampshire Chronicle. But it's still a stealth tax on the motorist, chipping away at working families. A recent visit to my dad in Newquay, Cornwall, also highlighted what could possibly be the most expensive parking I've ever seen. One privately owned car park was charging £35 for 8 hours. Eye-watering. Just as I was still reeling from how expensive it is to spend some time with your family outside doing something healthy, a chat started in one of the Facebook groups I'm in. The group is all about Victorious, the music festival in Portsmouth. It's a great event, a brilliant attraction for the city, and for that matter, for the whole county. However, there was one thing that really got people talking. For the first time in the festival's near decade of existence, there will be no on-site parking, meaning those with a car would need to fend for themselves on public transport or use the official park and ride. In previous years, the festival's official car park and ride cost £5. That was for the parking and the vehicle's occupants, as it's usually the way in park and rides. Last year, the rules changed slightly, in that it would be £5 per person. This pushed us to using park and ride up to being in the realms of too expensive. But with three of us in one car, we paid up and it seemed to be okay. This year, though, the price went up again. It was £5 to park and then £13.50 per person to ride. I took a car full on Saturday offering lifts to friends so they could drink. To use the park and ride, it would have cost £72.50 for one day. It will probably be of no surprise to you to hear that we did not choose this option and instead paid the lesser £12 on-street parking charge. Don't get me wrong, the freedom of owning a car is wonderful, and I am thankful every time I do not have to cycle to work in the rain or carry shopping bags on the bus. I do not know how I could possibly live my life with two kids without my car. I cannot afford to buy a family home within walking distance of the office in the centre of Winchester. Public transport is expensive and does not run anywhere near as frequently, reliably, or at times as we would need it. Nor does it take me to destinations I need to go. So what's the answer? Working families need a car, and to use it, we need to park. I don't know what the solution could be, but perhaps it's time for the councils to stop looking at the hard-working motorists as a solution to their financial programmes.
And now we have a couple of items from Belgarum, Andrew.
Yes, this is the an alternative look at the news. Victorian curio unearthed. An archaeological investigation has unearthed a Victorian pipe beneath a city centre car park. Winchester Pre-Construct Archaeology Limited, PCA, found the clay tobacco pipe in the digs for the first Winchester regeneration in Tanner Street. It was found in a trench dug in the car park next to Coitbury House and gives an insight into industry in Victorian times. There were many industrial premises, including an ironworks and a slaughterhouse, in the city centre. The pipe, which reads Peace 1856, commemorates the Treaty of Paris, which ended the Crimean War. The company posted on Facebook, "The pipe was made in Winchester at the Bridge Street kiln site by Richard Goodall, who ran the site from 1860 until at least 1914. The pipe mould has a long and complex history. It was originally used by James Chamberlain and lacked the shields, which were added after the 1856 peace treaty. The mould was then passed on to Richard Goodall, probably via his father Richard Sr., and occurs in the 1860s and the 1860s deposits from his kiln site in Winchester, so it was clearly in production for some time after the event commemorated. We may well come across more pipes from this kiln site in our ongoing work at the Central Winchester Regeneration Site." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the two sides of the pipe, which is a grand old clay pipe, and as described, has the shield on it with the 1856 on one side and a shield on the other side saying peace. The second article is called A Blast from the Past Uncovered. The refit of a Winchester city centre shop for a short time revealed the name of a previous occupant. Bang and Olufsen in the square has been closed for a major refurbishment. Workmen had removed the shop front on Friday, showing the sign for Young and White. Comments on Facebook page Winchester Picks said the company was an estate agent that operated for many years until the early 1980s. The sign says it was established in 1904, although it was unclear whether it traded from those premises all that time. Within hours, the sign was gone, covered over for the fitting that will promote Bang & Olufsen. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the shop front, showing Young and White and obviously various tradesmen there working on the refurbishment.
Thank you. So now we have the announcements this week, and we start with what's on. And make no apologies for focusing on the Heritage Open Days, which come up beginning of September. So between the 8th and the 17th of September, lots of buildings and museums are open, mostly free. So the free a list of the free ones that we've highlighted for you, just local ones in Winchester. You can just turn up for these, no pre-booking required. The Westgate Museum, that's open free to anybody who turns up on Saturday the 9th of September between 10 and 5. Winchester College Treasury is open between the Thursday the 14th and Sunday the 17th. Between 12 and 4 p.m. The Winchester Military Museums are open on Saturday the 16th of September between 10 and 4. Winchester City Mill is open on Saturday the 16th and Sunday the 17th of September between 10:30 and 4:30. The Hospital of St. Cross is open on Wednesday the 13th of September 9:30 to 5 o'clock. The official mayor's residence, Abbey House, is open on Friday the 15th of September between 10 and 3:30. The Chesil Theatre is open on Saturday the 9th of September between 11 and 3. And lastly, the Hampshire Chronicle office, where we're actually sat recording at the moment, will be open on Friday the 15th of September between 10 and 12, 10 midday, and that will include an opportunity to pop up and have a look at our recording studio on the top floor if you can manage two flights of stairs. The other item coming up is a touch tour for blind and partially sighted visitors to Winchester Cathedral. The cathedral provides pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour provides a history of the building and the stories of some of those who worked there or who were buried in the cathedral. There are opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of architecture of the cathedral, and you'll be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The recommended maximum size of each tour is 3 visually impaired visitors. Ideally, you should have a companion who will be granted free entry, but one can be provided on request. These tours take a little over an hour, and afterwards you'll be able to visit the Kings and Scribes exhibition, where there are also many exhibits which you can touch. The next tour is on Saturday, the 16th of September at 2:30 p.m. And if any group of up to 3 visually impaired people would like a tour on another date, please call the Visitor Services team on 01962 857275, and you can book a tour on the 16th for that one. So it's 01962 857275, or if you can use the internet, you can email visits@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. A lighting up time ends on Friday the 1st of September at 6:18 a.m. and begins at 7:52 p.m. And next Wednesday the 6th of September, it ends at 6:25 a.m. and begins at 7:42 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And that number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. New with items of general news. Nikki, please.
And this one I couldn't resist. Zoo thrilled with new arrival. The birth of one of the rarest mammals on the planet has been thrilled keepers at Marwell Zoo. A critically endangered African wild ass foal was born on Sunday, August the 20th. This is important as there are fewer than 200 left in the wild. Native to Eritrea, Ethiopia and Somalia, African wild asses have very low numbers surviving in the wild, and the numbers continue to decline. The new arrival at Marwell is reported to be doing well and can be seen with mother Nadifa in the paddock opposite Okapi playground. This is Nadifa's third foal. Keepers have confirmed that the foal is male but haven't given him a name yet. Darren Ives, senior animal keeper, Hoofstock, said, "The team is very excited after a year-long wait for the foal to be born. And what makes it even more special is we haven't had an African wild-ass foal born at Marwell since 2020. The foal has already been seen doing zoomies round the paddock and is looking nice and healthy. And to describe this foal, the colour it is a sort of pale, fawny, grey-beige, but the legs have stripes, horizontal stripes, from just where the leg starts down to its hoofs, as does the mother, but the colour combination and its dark eyes, dark nose, and very long ears, as you can imagine."
And we're still at Marwell. Guinea pigs in the wild, relatives arrive at zoo. Marwell is celebrating the arrival of a group of Brazilian guinea pigs. With 4 toes on their front feet and 3 on each of their back feet, these furry mammals have continuously growing nails and a short, stubby tail. They're native to Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, Brazil, Bolivia, North Argentina, Uruguay and Paraguay, and they live in a range of habitats including grassland and forest. Brazilian guinea pigs are the wild relatives of the domestic guinea pigs, living in small groups of 1 male, 2 or more females and any young the group produces. Brazilian guinea pigs, sometimes known as Brazilian cavies, are herbivores and graze on grasses, leaves and other plant matter. Amy Denny, Primates and Small Mammals Animal Team Leader, said, The Primates and Small Mammals team are excited not only to have the Brazilian guinea pigs as a new species in our collection, but also to be housing them with our golden-headed lion tamarins and pygmy marmosets overhead. This will be a dynamic and engaging experience for guests and hopefully capture people's interest about South American mammals. The team have been working hard to create an immersive and naturalistic habitat to demonstrate how the domestic guinea pig's relatives would live in the wild and provide a lot of opportunities for the species to demonstrate their natural behaviour. And there is a picture of this dear little soul. He's very dark and he seems to have sort of stripes over his sort of hip area. And he's quite small. He's very sweet.
Just whilst we're talking about Marwell, we were there with a grandchild earlier this week, and it's an excellent day out. Not only with the grandchild, but it's an excellent day out. Right, Princess Parade packs High Street. Winchester High Street was packed for the city's first Princess Parade. Scores of mini princes and princesses waited in line to meet their favourite characters, with Ariel, Elsa, Anna, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Rapunzel, Belle and Cinderella singing Disney classics and posing for pictures. After a busy meet and greet by the Buttercross, the princesses paraded down the High Street for their next stop at Abbey Gardens for even more sing-alongs. Sabrina Gardner was there with her daughter and friends, and she said, "We are so excited and will definitely be back if it happens again. It's great for the children." The girls have been so excited that they've been trying to get their dresses on all morning. The dresses aren't new. They already had wardrobes full of outfits. Lizzie Kessler jumped at the chance to take her grandchildren to meet their Disney heroes, and she said, "The turnout is fantastic. I'm really disappointed that they're not performing from the steps of the Buttercross so more people could see. We're eager to get some more photos with the princesses. There are fewer boys, but there are some, which is really important." Jacob Hotchkiss from Hairstock went all out for the event, dressing up as Woody from Toy Story. And he said, "I'm a huge Disney fan, so I decided to dress up for the day and get my guitar out." The princesses have been very welcoming. I've had people coming up to me saying, "Hey, it's Woody," and wanting pictures with me too. Director of the show, Anna Tucker, hopes to make it a yearly phenomenon. Speaking ahead of the Thursday, August the 24th show, she said, "After several very successful parades in Kent, Berkshire and London, I'm so excited to be bringing the show, the Snow Princesses magic, to Winchester this year. Our aim is to bring some magic, love and joy to little ones and give them an unforgettable experience." And the article is accompanied by a whole series of photographs of the little princesses, all dressed up, and a lot of them got really gone to town with their outfits. They're all looking as though they're having an absolutely fabulous time.
Festival wrapped over fly posting. The County Council has raised concerns over unauthorised fly posting by organisers of the Wickham Festival. Hampshire County Council, HCC, revealed that the team behind the annual Wickham Festival, including Councillor Peter Chegwin, had placed unapproved signs and posters in an attempt to promote the event. Councillor Chegwin, who holds positions as both a County Councillor and the leader of Gosport Borough Council, has been associated with the festival since its inception in 2012. This issue came to light after a Freedom of Information request was submitted to HCC. The query aimed to determine whether festival organisers had sought permission from the County Council to display fly posters across Hampshire. In response, HCC clarified that no permission was sought from Wickham Festival Limited or Councillor Peter Chegwin to put up fly posters on street furniture around Hampshire. Contact was made with the organisers of the festival to have the signs removed once the County Council was made aware of the situation. Additional statements from HCC state that they were unable to estimate the number of flyers posted throughout the county. However, it was noted that the majority of the posters were removed after corresponding with the festival's organisers. The statement added that options to prevent a recurrence for future events, which could include legal proceedings, are currently being investigated. Flyposting is considered a form of environment and visual pollution, subject to legal restrictions and regulations. The Town and Country Planning Regulations 2007 stipulates that most forms of outdoor advertising require planning permission from the local authority. Without prior authorisation, such advertising is considered unlawful. Councillor Chegwin was approached for comment.
Bereavement charity needs volunteers. A charity providing free bereavement support is recruiting more volunteers for its next round of training. Winchester Bereavement Support, WBS, is looking for 8 to 14 more bereavement visitors to join the team after undergoing the upcoming training course, as well as DBS checks and having a supervisor. All bereavement visitors undergo comprehensive training. Courses are held around about every 2 years to replace retiring volunteers. The next course, led by 2 qualified trainers, will run from Monday, September the 25th to Saturday, November the 11th. A committee member and volunteer of more than a decade, Rosemary Humbridge, said, "It's a great privilege to go into people's homes when they're probably at the lowest times in their lives. It feels such a worthwhile thing to do that maybe you can have given your time to somebody. No experience is required to become a volunteer. Contact the WBS secretary at secretary@winchesterbereavementsupport.org or UK or call 01962 620010 for more. And I'll repeat those. secretary@winchesterbereavementsupport.org UK or call 01962 620010 for more information. And there's a picture of 4 of the bereavement visitors.
Work starts on new village. 3 regional house builders have teamed up with developers to start building the first 600 homes of a new village north of Fareham. The Buckland Group has formed partnerships with regional house builders C.J. Fry and Son of Thacom, and Pye Homes to construct the first phase of Wellbourne Garden Village, which will eventually host 6,000 homes. This new business partnership lets the family-run firms delay paying for the land until the homes are sold. Philip Fry, managing director of C.J. Fry and Son, which is based in Dorset, said, "Tradition and craftsmanship run through the blood of the family business, and that each project they work on is a bespoke exercise in recreating the features and characteristics that are typical of the surrounding area." Richard Baum, CEO of Thacom, said, "The West Sussex-based firm is focused on the communities they create and the well-being of those within them." Graham Flint, Managing Director of Pye Homes, which is based in Oxfordshire, added, "It is our mission to leave a positive and lasting impact in the communities in which we deliver homes. This is why we are excited by some of the innovations that the Wellbourne project offers. For example, the ground source heat network system that will heat our houses uses considerably less energy than traditional heating methods and saves more carbon as a result. That is better for the planet and for the residents." The Wellbourne development will include 6,000 homes, schools, shops, green spaces, business and healthcare facilities, and located near the South Downs National Park and the Hampshire coast. Buckland recently submitted detailed planning applications to Fareham Borough Council, marking a significant step toward realising the project. Councillor Sean Woodward, the leader of the council, said, "This is about absolute quality of build, and using family companies is extremely positive. We're at last going to be seeing new homes on the ground early in the new year." and this is accompanied by a photograph of Wellborn Garden, or I guess it's an artist's impression of Wellborn Garden Village, as it will eventually appear.
Bid to help teen who may never walk again. A fundraiser has been launched for a teenager who may never walk again. Matei Tiraru, a Peter Simmons College student, was cycling down St. Catherine's Hill near Winchester when he hit a ditch and was knocked unconscious. The 17-year-old from Southampton woke up to find he had no feeling in his legs. After being found by a passerby, Matei was taken to Southampton General Hospital, where he has remained since the accident on August the 4th. Doctors told him it was a miracle he survived. It may be difficult for him to walk again. His school friend, Julia Wagsack, has set up a fundraiser to pay for specialist treatment. Imagine cutting something with a blade and it was about to fall off and it was just holding on to the edge. That was my spine, Matei said. Titanium is currently holding his spine together following an operation, but the nerves in his body need to be activated to help him walk. Matei said, my parents are trying to pay for a special service to activate the nerves in my body, which is what the fundraiser will help pay for. My parents will need the money as it's not a cheap service. It's an attempt to get my nerves back and it will be a long process. The fundraiser is a nice thing for Julia to do. She's my best friend. Friends since year 7, Julia and Matei met at Cantell School in Southampton. Upon hearing the news of Matei's awful accident, the 17-year-old immediately leapt into action. She said, it's a ticking time bomb. The longer he stays in bed, the lower the chances of him walking again. The family are trying to get him into a specialist centre in Salisbury to help him walk, but the longer he stays lying down, the more his nerves will go. I set up the fundraiser to help pay for private healthcare, as it's expensive. I found out about his accident when I was in Portugal. I broke down and looked at flights to come home. I want him to be able to walk. Although Matei's health is improving, the future is uncertain, and he will have to continue his education at Peter Simmons virtually. Both he and Julia hope the fundraiser, with a target of £5,000, can help him. Matei said, I'm feeling better, but my body isn't. I will be in hospital for a long time. Doctors told me it was a miracle I survived. It was a million to one chance. If I had moved any more on the day of the accident, I would be dead. And there's pictures of them, the two of them on a couple of different beach scenes, just so happy and young and having a great time. And a picture of Matei in hospital, honestly, it breaks my heart. His tubed up nose, pipes, just that scene of someone in hospital in bed and his sweet face. Now, there's a fundraising thing here which we're going to have to concentrate on. If you want to donate, you go to www.gofundme.com/F for Francis/help-support-Matei's, which is MATEIS-recovery. To donate to Julia's fundraiser, I'll quickly go that again. www.gofundme.com/F/help-support-Matei's-recovery. And I shall be going to that website when I go home.
Road prone to flooding closes. A road prone to flooding will be closed for continued southern waterworks. Contractors have been trying to repair the manhole in Kiln Lane by Branbridge Garden Centre on and off since the start of the year, with the flooding causing sewage to flow into the River Itchen. Southern Water will start further work on the manhole that's swamped by heavy rain from Friday, August the 25th, and be ongoing for several weeks. A section of Kiln Lane from Otterbourne Hill to the bridge over the River Itchen will be closed from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Diversions will be in place and access will be maintained for residents. Branbridge Garden Park Centre will remain open and will be accessible from the Highbridge Road end of Kiln Lane. A spokesperson for Southern Water said, over the next few weeks, residents will see a number of works taking place involving tankers, traffic management and diverting flows to storage tank. This work will provide additional storage capacity when it rains to prevent flooding and to help our goal of reducing pollution and protecting the River Itchen. As part of this, we will investigate where the rainwater is entering the wastewater system so we can resolve this issue. We will need to disconnect the surface water pipes that have been incorrectly connected to the wastewater sewer, which is the main cause of the increased flooding. Additionally, we have conducted a CCTV survey of the sewer and cleaned the pipe to make sure it can carry as much wastewater as possible. To enable the sewer work, we have installed a cable along Kiln Road, along with installation of sewer level monitors. We also be putting further traffic management in place and close footpaths where necessary. And there's a picture of the flooded area outside Branbridge's entrance.
City hairdresser Giuseppe cut out for top honours. A Winchester-based stylist has been shortlisted for the Southern Hairdresser of the Year award. Giuseppe Manco, whose eponymous saloon is in the Staple Gardens, is in the running for the title at HJ's British Hairdressing Awards, which is sponsored by Schwarzkopf Professional. He is one of six finalists, each shortlisted having submitted four photos demonstrating the breadth of their hairdressing expertise, including both creative and technical abilities. Giuseppe will now submit a further four images for the final round of judging in September. Giuseppe said, "I am so thrilled to have been shortlisted for the BHAs. It's my first shot at these prestigious awards and would be so thrilling if we did win. I'm also very excited about the beautiful pictures we entered to be judged. My collection is called La Dolce Vita and celebrates the beauty and elegance of the female form. Our industry is full of such talented creatives, so to be shortlisted alongside names I admire so much feels very special. I'm incredibly proud of my collection and hopes the judges will see the passion and the time that has gone into creating it." Widely regarded as the highlight of the hairdressing calendar, the annual awards, British Hairdressing Awards, now in its 39th year, celebrate the outstanding creative and technical skills of stylists from across the United Kingdom. Judged anonymously by more than 100 leading hairdressers, including celebrity stylists, session stylists, saloon owners, previous winners, and Hall of Fame members, winners are set to be announced during a red carpet ceremony on Monday, November the 27th at the JW Marriott Grosvenor House, London. Jane Lewis Orr, Executive Director of HJ's British Hairdressing Awards, said, "Almost 40 years since their inception, HJ's British Hairdressing Awards continue to be the most coveted accolade in hairdressing, celebrating the artistry and expertise of the remarkable individuals that make up our industry. And Giuseppe has presented a collection that is both eye-catching and inspiring, showcasing a diversity of skills and an eye for detail. He should feel incredibly proud to have made an impact amongst such impressive competition." And this is accompanied by a photo of Giuseppe with his wife Veronica, looking very pleased, presumably outside their salon.
Bakery chain lands in Winchester High Street. A new bakery has opened in Winchester High Street, filling a former banking unit that was left empty for 2 years. Wenzel's The Bakers opened its doors for the first time at 7 a.m. on Tuesday with a range of bread, pastries, sweet treats and meal deals on offer. The bakery chain, which began in London in 1975, is expanding across the south, with Winchester being one of its five Hampshire stores, including new ones in Basingstoke, Whiteley and Southampton. To celebrate the opening, the business is selling bread and coffee for 99p for its first day. The bakery is still recruiting for more staff to join the team of 11, with store manager Chris Frost at the helm. Manager of Winchester's Business Improvement District, BID, Sarah Davis, said, "I'm really excited about yet another new opening on the High Street. I didn't know about Wenzel's till recently. I went to one in Whiteley, which I was very excited about. The nice thing about Wenzel's is that it has a different range of stuff, and it's affordable. It's nice to have something different. And there's a lovely picture of the six staff there, and all with their rather smart uniforms. And rows of those, I think they're called submarines. Anyway, French bread slit down the middle with every sort of filling. Delicious."
Stolen tools in van cost thousands. A robbery in Chandlersford saw approximately £4,500 worth of tools stolen from a Ford Transit van. The raid took place outside an address in Suffolk Drive around about 10:45 p.m. on Thursday, the 24th of August, with it being reported that three men had broken into the vehicle. It is alleged that the men had threatened a member of the public with an offensive weapon before striking a nearby vehicle, causing significant damage to the bonnet and headlights. They later fled with approximately £4,500 worth of tools. Officers conducted a wide area search, but were unable to locate the vehicle or the suspects. They are now appealing for information following the aggravated burglary. Police Constable Jodie Bartlett said, "We are really keen to speak to anyone who may have seen or heard anything in relation to this incident. Were you in the area at the time? Perhaps you witnessed what happened, or maybe you had CCTV or Ring doorbell footage for the incident taking place. This was an aggravated robbery where extreme violence was threatened and significant alarm and distress caused to those involved. We are carrying out a number of inquiries today in the local area to locate those responsible, including house-to-house visits and forensics, but we would implore anyone with information to come forward. Anyone with information in relation to this incident is asked to call 101.
And this next article triggered quite a bit of discussion amongst us here in the studio. And it's entitled, "Elvis's Mink Coat Sells for £128,000. A custom-made coat worn by Elvis Presley during the last year of his life has sold for £128,000 at auction. The garment was purchased by a US collector when it went under the hammer at Henry Aldridge and Son in Devizes, Wiltshire. Presley gave the leather and mink jacket, which is 1 metre and 20 centimetres in length, to the brother of his fiancée, Ginger Alden, before he died in 1977. It has leather shoulders, collar, pockets, belt, with leather down the undersides of the arms, and an 8-button front closure. It is accompanied by a letter of authenticity from Rosemary Alden Starkey, who is Ginger Alden's sister. Auctioneer Andrew Aldridge said, "For me, it encapsulates the glamour of 1970s Vegas. Elvis in a mink coat." And it went to a collector in the USA and was underbid by a collector here in the United Kingdom. And is accompanied by a couple of photographs of the aforementioned coat, which, as I said, generated quite a lot of discussion around the studio table.
Locals vent frustration at early closing village shop. Residents in a village near Winchester are growing increasingly frustrated with the sporadic opening hours of their only convenience store. The Cooperative Food and Post Office in Colden Common has been closing as much as 8 hours early due to lack of staff. Residents have been posting daily in the Facebook group, Colden Common Residents, to keep one another in the loop about whether the shop, owned by the Southern Co-op, is open each day to save others the journey. Sam Balls posted in the group, "Does anyone know why we seem to have a part-time co-op in the village? I've lost count of the times they've shut early recently, without any forewarning. It is so frustrating." Another villager posted, "Co-op closed at 1 p.m. If they are looking to lose their business, along with the post office's erratic closure times, I think the time is right to give Tesco Express a shot at improving the store and keeping in mind the need for a strong identity and strong spirit and show of positivity in the community." Others have contacted the co-op's customer service team. Parish Council Clerk Debbie Harding emailed the Chief Executive on Monday, August the 21st, on behalf of the parish's concerned residents. The parish clerk said, "We don't know why the shop keeps closing early. The unpredictable hours make it hard for shoppers to plan their visits, which is particularly problematic for people with busy schedules or less mobility. They served us well for many, many years and were outstanding during the pandemic. We're not calling for a new shop, but for them to get to the root of the cause and solve it." Parish Council's Chair, Maggie Hill, said, "It's been going on since November, and naturally residents are frustrated. We're trying to do what we can, but it is out of our hands. If there's anything the Parish Council can do, we will definitely try, but unfortunately, there's not a lot we can do. We'd like to see things improve, and we will continue to push the co-op for this. It is a concern. We used to have another shop in Branbridge and Main Road, but this is our only one now, so we're down to the minimum." A spokesperson for Southern Co-op said, "We accept the level of service isn't up to our usual high standards and apologise for any inconvenience this has caused our valued customers. We'd only close the store early when we've exhausted all other options, and unfortunately, the current situation is a result of a perfect storm of issues that we are working hard to resolve."
And for those of you with a sweet tooth, sweet success for homemade brownie bakers. Basingstoke-based brownie bakers have been celebrating after receiving awards for their brownie selection. The Homemade Brownie Company was founded by Laura Bland after she began baking many years ago whilst away from work and bringing up her two sons at home. With the encouragement and help of family and friends, Laura decided to make her homemade brownies available to a wider audience through an online store, and in 2016 the Homemade Brownie Company was born. Laura originally baked and worked from her and her partner Adam's house before moving to her current unit in Stroudley Road in 2021 with a permanent team. The company also has a kiosk in Festival Place. Laura and her team have been celebrating a number of wins from the Great Taste Awards, with award-winning brownies in both 2022 and 2023. The company received 2 stars for its Christmas cake brownie and 1 more for each of its salted caramel brownie, chocolate orange brownie and Snickers brownie. These join the 2 stars the company received in 2022, with 1 award each for its triple chocolate and coffee caramel brownies. Laura said, "We were absolutely delighted to receive 2 stars at the 2022 awards, so to receive an additional 5 this year was surreal. We are all over the moon and very proud of the whole team. It's nice to see our hard work starting to pay off." Laura is gluten intolerant herself, and everything produced by the Homemade Brownie Company, 100% gluten-free and celiac safe. And there's a lovely picture of Laura with her 3 certificates, 1 for the peanut and caramel chocolate brownie, and the chocolate cake brownie. I can't see what the other one was, but she looked very pleased with it all.
Now, this one is entitled "Art Teacher's Labour of Love in Tribute to Sun." A Winchester art teacher is putting together an exhibition of paintings in high street shops created by her students to raise money for charity in memory of her son. Daphne Vaughan of Edgar Road has been teaching art for 40 to 50 years and now runs weekly classes for local pupils at her home studio. The group of 20 children, aged 7 to 14, have been busy painting, drawing and using chalk to recreate the shops in Winchester High Street. Around 34 pieces of art by the students will be on show at Winchester City Museum in the square from September the 9th to the 17th as part of the Winchester Heritage Open Days. Mrs. Vaughan said, "It's about children and their artwork and our city. I want them to appreciate it like I do. I'm immensely proud of the kids and my city. I hope this exhibition leaves a sort of legacy. The children are delighted with the work they have done and to have it on display." they will be incredibly excited to see it, all in the gallery and in High Street windows. After her son Tom Vaughan drowned in Los Angeles at just 34, Mrs. Vaughan has been determined to carry on his legacy and raise funds through what she knows best, art. A few days before he died, Tom said to his mum that his job wasn't for him, and he instead wanted to create a company called Know Thyself to help mankind. Mrs. Vaughan set up Know Thyself Charitable Trust a year later in 2020 to help people overcome stress and anxiety in the workplace. Proceeds from the exhibition will go towards the charity. The art teacher has also been visiting the High Street businesses to see if they'd be willing to buy a copy of their shop painting. Mrs. Vaughan said, "My world fell apart when Tom died. I knew this is what I had to do. What was stressing Tom the most was mental health problems. It was too much for him. I'm going to do this for Tom. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do, but when your child asks you to do something, you do it. It's been enormously time-consuming, but this exhibition has been enormously helpful to channel my grief." There will be free entry to Winchester City Museum, including the Young Artists Exhibition, on Saturday, September the 9th. Other days, normal admission prices will apply. And a free trail connecting the buildings and the artwork along the High Street will be running from Friday, September the 8th, to Sunday, September the 17th. And this is accompanied by a series of photographs. There's Daphne there with some of the paintings of the High Street Trail. And then we've got a series of pictures of various paintings done by the children, showing some of the shops along the High Street. So I would strongly recommend that if one can, one goes and looks at that. And the charity is a very worthwhile charity.
Company sends relief convoy to help Ukraine. A timber merchant with depots in Alsford and Southampton has dispatched a convoy of lorries to provide aid to Ukraine. Covers has donated 3 crane lorries to the humanitarian organisation Stay Safe UA, which are now en route to help Ukrainian civilians near the front line. The lorries, with volunteer drivers Chris Hurst, Malcolm Sargent, Jamie Lewis, and Lena Lazar from the Healing Hands Network charity at the wheel, are heading for the Poland-Ukraine border from Covers office in Chichester, where they will be handed over to Stay Safe UA. Their eventual destinations are Bakhmut and Kherson, a journey of about 1,800 miles. The lorries are loaded with a forklift, a tracked recovery vehicle, a bobcat loader, an angle broom for rubbish clearance, and a container of equipment including fridges, freezers, clothing and medical supplies that have been donated or paid for with donations. One lorry will carry a mobile shower unit, another will become a mobile bakery, and a third will be used for transport tasks wherever the need is greatest. Covers chairman Rupert Green said, "UK to Ukraine, it's all one word, it's quite clever, Healing Hands Network and Stay Safe UA do fantastic work getting aid to the Ukrainian people. We hoped our lorries and forklift might be of some use, but didn't imagine how many problems it would solve for Stay Safe UA. This was all put together in less than 3 months, thanks to the amazing work from our Covers team, especially our transport manager, Adam Conrad, and UK to Ukraine, Healing Hands Network, and Stay Safe." And there's a picture of the 3 huge lorries, carriers, and 18 of the staff outside, presumably a lot of the people, the drivers, and the people who put it together, and a big poster of UK to Ukraine, and the Ukrainian blue and yellow flag. What an effort.
City University's free degree offer for veterans. The University of Winchester has formed a new partnership with the MOD's Personal Recovery Centre, Tedworth House, to extend the offer of free archaeology degree courses to service veterans. The university has offered free waiving undergraduate students an archaeological for wounded, injured or sick veterans since 2016, when the scheme was established by Dr. Paul Everill. the initiative has now been expanded to include the MOD's Personal Recovery Centre, PRC, at Tedworth House, Tidworth, enabling personnel on recovery duty to benefit from the opportunity to study archaeology directly after leaving the military. Winchester was the first university in the country to deliver a BSc degree in archaeology practice, delivering vocational skills for those wanting to pursue a career in commercial developed-led archaeology. Captain Leanne Kelly, training officer at Tedworth House, said service personnel on recovery duty face the challenges of not only their health issues, but also potentially the unknown in relation to their future. For some, a life in the service is no longer possible, and seeking new opportunities in civilian life can be daunting. All service personnel have an excellent set of transferable skills and are highly motivated, but some find it difficult to identify a new and exciting challenge that matches their interests. This is where the University of Winchester has stepped in to provide those leaving the service with an amazing opportunity to study archaeology. Archaeology seems to have an enormous potential for improving well-being, said Dr. Everall. For the veterans who come to Winchester to study and retrain, there is also the important element of transition into civilian career they are passionate about and being able to redefine themselves. Alistair Edgar, a former Royal Marine about to start his fourth year at the university. Having left the Royal Marines in 2016, I was effectively at a loss as to what to do next, and it was by chance that I discovered archaeology through Waterloo Uncovered, said Mr. Eager. I was hooked, and it was the University of Winchester that enabled me to turn this historical passion into a new career. Being offered the studentship in 2020 was a life-changing opportunity for me. This career change would have been otherwise unattainable with a young family to support. It's been a fantastic experience, and I really enjoy testing myself again. And there's a picture of them doing their archaeological dig. I don't know where it is, but I presume it's somewhere near Winchester.
Official opening of new Winchester Cafe. A Winchester Cafe has held a ribbon-cutting ceremony to celebrate its official opening. As previously reported, Naffy Cafe, actually that's a terrible rhyme, but never mind, Naffy Cafe in St. George's Street opened its doors to customers in mid-April before closing for a brief refurbishment. It opened for good on Thursday, July the 27th. The ribbon cutting took place last Friday with an array of special guests, including Naffy Chief Executive Steve Marshall and Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire Joan Ferrer, who cut the ribbon after giving a short speech. Special cupcakes featuring the Naffy logo were given to both guests and customers. Mr. Marshall said, "The very important part for us is that we first looked at where are the most important locations around the UK for Naffy to open. Winchester was very high on our list, partly because there is a strong veteran community here. There is a strong connection to armed forces, both past and present, but also historically. We're optimistic that Winchester will be one of our best sites." And this is accompanied by a photograph at the opening. And we've got there standing outside the cafe. You've got the Deputy Lieutenant Joan Ferrer, who's looking resplendent with a fine hat on. And she's cutting the ribbon alongside the Naffy Winchester manager, Stephanie.
Writer's Dangerous Swim for Charity. A Winchester writer has completed a dangerous 2.5-mile solo cross-Solent swim from the Isle of Wight. Mark Ryan, 61, took on the challenge to raise money for Winnell Rock School, a music charity offering the chance to write and create music for free to kids aged 10 to 17. After finishing the swim from Gurnard Beach to the Watch House at Leap, where he met his partner Kate 2 years ago, Mark is keen to get over the £1,000 mark with a current total of £950. The National Coast Watch at Stone Point, Leap Beach, who watched the swimmer on their cameras the whole way, said they don't know of anyone who has swam the same route before, so Mark is claiming his time of 1 hour and 15 minutes as a record. The Winchester writer was delighted to be met by his son Luca, his partner Kate and her sisters, and Winnell Rock School's Peter Brown at the finish line. Mr. Ryan said, "I was swept a bit west by the current, but it could have been worse. I'd been prepared for 4 hours in the water. The main difficulties were psychologically before. I was told I could be swept as much as 1 mile west, and all of these other scenarios, which didn't actually end up happening. I was preparing for the worst mental test. The sea felt so cold at the start because my nervous system was shot from all the nerves, and having not slept, I couldn't breathe. But once I settled into the swim, it was felt fantastic. They waved me in from the safety boat whenever I started drifting, and I landed in the right spot. I feel all my 61 years on land, but I feel about 20 in the water. When Peter came down with the Rock School banner, it felt really good because that was what it was all about. I had my successful day, but he has a successful day every day helping those kids. All teenagers these days have been through COVID and isolation and so many challenges. My partner's teenager goes to the Rock School and I've seen the good it can do. They need a creative outlet and the charity helps show them that they can do anything." Winnell Rock School's project coordinator, Peter Brown, said, "We are so grateful to fundraisers like Mark. His efforts will fund around 10 of our successful free band workshops for young people without having to devise the new projects, services and outcomes that funders now so often require." And there's a picture of him standing on Leap Beach, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, with Peter Brown, the in charge of the school, with their big banner.
Harry Potter theme for Watercress Halloween. The court Watercress line has announced its Halloween event coming to the Heritage Railway in October. The spooktacular Wizard Week runs from October the 21st to October the 29th, with magic and mayhem guaranteed. Visitors will be able to ride with the Wizard Express steam train and walk in Harry Potter's footsteps over the famous railway bridge where Harry Potter received his Hogwarts Express ticket in film. Thrills and chills can be found exploring the Harry Potter-style coach at Alsford, meeting creepy crawly creatures, wise owls and fearless falcons, and taking flying lessons with Professors Slugwind and Apricus. Young visitors are encouraged to wear their spookiest Halloween costumes for the Watercress Line's Fancy Dress Competition, with three age categories for the prizes for under fours, brand new wizards, 4 to 8 year olds, emerging wand talent, and over eights, potion masters. The Watercress Line CAO Rebecca Daly said, "We're casting our Halloween magic to make this year's Wizard Week more spellbinding than ever before." And there's a lovely picture of three youngsters, two wizards, and a very fearsome witch.
That sounds really fantastic, and as Norma knows, I have a special thing about steam engines, which we've discussed before. Volunteers, a huge help down on the farm. A farm-based charity helping adults with learning difficulties gain work, skills and friendship was blown away by a team of volunteers from a power firm. 40 staff from UK Power Network Services spent 3 days at the Boas project near Sutton Scotney, laying paving slabs in fruit and vegetable cages to improve access, installing trace heating, weed clearance, collecting and processing chicken eggs, and supporting the members working in the kitchen, craft room, and wood workshop. At a time when just 7% of adults with learning difficulties are in paid employment, Boas enables adults excluded from mainstream work to learn a range of skills and crafts, make food, practice woodwork, and take care of sheep, donkeys, guinea pigs, and hens. Stuart Palmer, the Boas manager, said, "UK Power Network Services is probably the first corporate partner we have worked with who were able to complete some really big and quite technical tasks to a high standard in a very short timescale. It has blown us away, as we were expecting these projects to take considerably longer to complete. The smooth pathways laid mean that our less physically able members can now enjoy harvesting soft fruit much more safely. We are a small, independent, local charity, so a team like this coming to us and really hitting some big projects so hard really moves the dial and makes a big difference. We hope they will come back next year. And this is accompanied by a photograph down on the farm of some of the volunteers, and also some of the donkeys are there as well. But an excellent job by all involved.
New city centre shop set to open doors today. Winchester's newest stationery shop will be opening one day later than originally planned. Workers started renovating the frontage of the former Paper Chase shop in St George's Street on Monday, July the 31st, giving it a fresh lick of paint and installing the word Mooch. It had been set to open on Wednesday, August the 30th, but has been moved back by one day. A Mooch spokesman said, "Due to the bank holiday, we have moved the opening to Thursday, August the 31st, and there will be a buzz from Tuesday, whereby we will be setting up and getting the store ready for opening." Paper Chase closed at the end of March after the stationery company went into administration. While Tesco announced a deal to buy the brand and intellectual property, the shops themselves have not been purchased. Other former Paper Chase units across the country have been converted into Mooch, such as in Lincoln, Plymouth and Sheffield. They specialise in gifts, stationery and homeware items, along with toys and seasonal products. A Mooch spokesman previously said, "We are really excited to be opening in Winchester City Centre and we look forward to having strong relations with the centre management team and our customers."
Rotary backs fantastic student programme. A Winchester organisation is urging students to apply for the chance to study in America with their support. The Georgia Rotary Student Programme is open for applications for its 2024 to 2025 scholarship. The Winchester Rotary Club is hoping to sponsor multiple students £1,000 to study in Georgia for a year, with the rest of the fees being paid by the Georgia Rotary. Applicants recommended by their home Rotary Club from across the world are given the opportunity to study whatever course they like. They live in student accommodation on campus but are hosted by local Rotary families. Steve Freeney, who coordinates the project for Winchester Rotary Club, said, "Students can try out courses and make sure they're making the right choice for a degree. It puts them ahead of other students. It's a fantastic opportunity and not one to be missed. Parents have said how life-changing and transformative it has been for their children. If more students can afford the £1,000 sponsorship, then they can also help them with the process. For more information on sponsorship from Winchester Rotary, contact Steve Freeney at steve.freeney.mail@gmail.com. And there's a lovely picture of two of the students. One of them, Nancy Meldrum, is sitting in front of a very tall building. And Rob Connor is standing with the iconic Hollywood sign behind him.
Second cafe in fight to survive. The owners of a Winchester cafe bar, which closed suddenly, say they are struggling to keep their other business going. With no warning, Alex Donman and Laura Turner shut Autumn House in the square last Monday. Now they have written to members of their other cafe, the Pump House on Garnier Road in St. Cross, outlining the situation and seeking funding for a new initiative. In an email seen by the Chronicle, they write, "This is an important message that I wanted to make sure you hear about it before we make it public. Since we opened Autumn House last year, we have tried our very best efforts to create something special and evolve with the changing environment, but it has proved increasingly difficult, and our only option now is to cease trading and close the doors. It should be known that we are fighting hard to keep the Pump House going in these challenging times. And although the future is looking brighter than before, we are definitely not out of the woods yet. Our focus is now fully on building and strengthening the pump house business, and we're excited about the future. We are in negotiations with the landlord, which is Winchester College, about our lease, with the aim of extending the lease to 10 years and getting a better deal. We also have plans to create a much better health and well-being centre in the new building to the rear, which is the old eco kitchen building. This will see better gym equipment, proper studio, sauna and plunge pool. As you can imagine, this will take a sizeable investment, and we'll be appealing to our members for new investment to do this. We'll be releasing more information about the investment opportunity in the next couple of days. The Autumn House building is owned by the City Council. The pump house owners also used to own the general store, which is across the road in the square. But the shop and cafe was taken over by new owners and under a different company in February. The pump house has been contacted for further comment, but Mr. Donlan and Miss Turner told the pump house members they were on pre-planned leave.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts, and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.